This is Speaking of Faith First Person. This online exclusive is part of Repossessing Virtue, an ongoing series in which we search for fresh ways to think and talk about the current economic crisis. I'm Kate Moose, managing producer of Speaking of Faith. Here, I speak with Serene Jones. She is the president of Union Theological Seminary in New York City. For starters, Serene Jones, in what ways do you consider this a moral or spiritual crisis of your own or of our culture?
What a wonderful question. And it's one that I wish I had a decisive answer to that I could say, it's definitely a moral spiritual crisis. I'm given pause, though, with respect to answering it simply in the affirmative because I think at a very basic level, it is a crisis that we from the start need to assign to specific people and specific kinds of structural and historical decisions that were made that produced this crisis. I think sometimes as liberal Protestants, the community that I myself come out of, we tend to immediately take a social crisis and turn it into something that has only to do with our own interior landscapes and our general sense of our limits and capacity. So it's about human greed in general, or it's about human frailty in general. Mm-hmm. And we forget the fact that history actually produces these things. People make bad decisions, bad structures get put in place, and irresponsible leaders make decisions that lead to disasters. So we need to be very good about thinking in concrete ways and policy ways about what went wrong and what it takes to fix it.
Mm-hmm. And not just shrug our shoulders at the fallen world and get on with it, in other words.
Absolutely, absolutely. We can't shrug our shoulders and say, you know, along with Martin Luther, we're just all sinners and that's what happens. I myself come out of the Reformed theological tradition, and John Calvin's approach to such matters has been informative for me. And he was a thinker who, on the one hand, did press people to be reminded of the fact that we all are broken sinners. We are all riven by greed. We are all capable of gross misconduct as we follow our own desires and not those of God's. On the other hand, Calvin was very insistent that if we work hard at it, we are capable of enormous good, and that it is possible to find and design social structures and systems that, when we put them in place, allow us to be better, happier, more interconnected, and responsible people. Mm. That's part of the strength of Calvinism, is it believes in social structures. But it doesn't let you forget that the people who inhabit social structures are fallen creatures.
Yes. What would that look like under these circumstances, do you think?
Well, with respect to the present positions being developed and put forth in Washington, I think that we would be better served by moving towards a system of a smaller banking system. And that I'm very puzzled by the hope that the present administration has in this private interest buying toxic debts and turning the system around that way. I would be much more inclined to move, in a sense, move forward by moving backwards, where we go to more local banking systems, and that the state needs to take a much more active role in managing the banks.
Mm-hmm.
And has to be, you know, if it's going to be a bailout, then the government should take responsibility for the decisions that follow that bailout. And getting back to this question of social structures and individual responsibility, it's interesting to look at the whole social conversation around the bonuses and salary caps. And on the one hand, I agree with people who say, look, that's just a drop in the bucket with respect to the depth of the problem that we confront, which is in the billions and billions, and this is trillions, and this only has to do with a small fraction of that, and it's a distraction. And I agree that structurally that's true, but where I think it's absolutely important is that if we stop assigning the responsibility of people to the mess that we've gotten in, and that we stop thinking about it in terms of lifestyle and value, then in those abstractions, we end up, to use a sort of very theoretical language to it, it's like we have a system of linguistic signifier circulating with no morally responsible agents tied to it. And we need to tie the crisis to people for whom it was the occasion of their decisions and that they benefited from it in particular ways. So I am completely in favor of salary caps, and I'm an advocate of high taxation of bonus structures.
Mm-hmm. So you're living somewhat in this world of pragmatic action. What do we do? What are the structures we create to make sure we don't find ourselves in this situation again? Are there also resources of a particular spiritual nature that you bring to the crisis as you contemplate it, see it in other people's lives, or perhaps in your own life? I mean, this is something that's affecting institutions. There are layoffs. People we all know who have lost their jobs or are living in fear of losing their jobs, people, you know, adjusting to limited incomes and incomes of a different level. Are you addressing it also in terms of the spiritual resources you bring to your life?
Yes, absolutely. And that's the flip side of the question about moral responsibility and virtue. The image that keeps coming to mind for me is just in the same way we don't need a irresponsible bailout of the banks, we also do not want to have a spiritual bailout package that allows us to jump over the real deep issues that this is surfacing. And if we have a spiritual bailout package that trivializes what's happened with respect to human value, then we're just going to keep reproducing the problem.
Say more. What do you mean by a spiritual bailout?
A spiritual bailout that assumes that what is ahead of us in terms of reconfiguring the deep values that motivate our culture, a spiritual bailout would be one that says, well, if we can just buck up and support each other until the stock market gets back on track, and then we can return to the same set of values and the same system of economic production, then we'll just be fine. So it's sort of like, let's bring in, you know, this is just a little hard lesson that we have to learn, but pretty soon we'll be popping back on track. Mm-hmm. What I think is needed is, in terms of religious communities in particular, a really deep reevaluation of what we value. Mm-hmm. Different ages have different theological themes that mark them. And we have been living in an age in which material prosperity has seeped into the bones of our churches in ways that are often unconscious, in which we have begun to value happiness and to value our lives with respect to what our lives produce in market value. We think in terms of, you know, this is a very abstract way to put it, but when we look at what we do in the course of our daily life, we think in terms of what we've produced and how it can be given some sort of measure of value with respect to, let's say, what it would be valued out of terms of commercial television or music valued in terms of, you know, how it would play on iTunes. Mm-hmm. As a systematic theologian who is always in my own imagination arranging the world in terms of Christian doctrines, I think that we're moving into an age in which we see the reemergence of the doctrine of justification by faith. Mm. And what justification by faith, in its good old Reformation fashion, tells us is that God finally values us based on absolutely no merit that we have produced internal to our own lives. Mm. our value is not earned. It is a gift that comes to us from beyond. And that in God's eyes, the grace that comes to us and gives our lives value is sheer gift. And in that sense, it has a core essence to it that marks us as beloved creatures that is not something that can rise or fall with markets.
Yes.
But to get that into the imagination of our culture, which measures everything in terms of productivity,
mm-hmm.
that is a huge task. And our religious communities, you know, for the most part, haven't been trained to do that.
Yes. It would be a different world.
Yeah. It would.
Serene, tell me, and you've begun to answer this question, I think, but tell me, what are you doing now that is different in your own life, in your professional life or your personal life, and why and how is it different?
It's such a good question. At one level, I think I'm doing things different, and I usually respond at a personal level in such intuitive ways to the changes taking place around me that it's not until several years later I realize the changes that happened inside me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a practitioner of yoga, and I am trying to do more yoga, and this as a spiritual discipline, I try to breathe in such a way that what yoga does, if you have a clenched muscle, is tell you that if you breathe into it and you relax, the best way to move forward and to get more motion in your body is not by forcing it, but by letting go and letting it happen through the breath that goes through it. So I think in these market conditions, it's very tempting to respond to it by clenching up inside in terms of one's lifestyle, but even more in terms of one's heart and the worries that wake you up in the middle of the night and the anxieties that can, you know, drive you crazy if you contemplate the decline of your pension. But if I can just breathe into those spaces and look at this moment as a moment, and I don't mean this in a silly way, but it's a moment of enormous opportunity. And to say, look, in a sense, I'm standing on the edge of a crumbling universe, and for every piece that crumbles, the potential for a new sky to break through and for new edges of awareness to peek in and open all of us up in profound ways is there. And I, one of the worries that I have in all of this is that I think that as a nation and as religious communities, we are headed towards a time in which there's going to be a renewed populism. You know, let's give the power back to the people. The people should, you know, have a stake in what's happening and don't let an elite run things. And but historically speaking, the people can be enormously open and creative in their instincts and inspirations. But, quote, the people can also be fearful and anxiety-driven and destructive.
The people can be a mob.
The people can be a mob, and the people can be a mecca. And which one of those we're going to be, we have to decide in every moment. And we need leaders who are not afraid of the people, who find energy in the spirit as it moves between people and amongst people, but sees that spirit being funneled in ways about openness and not about closure and harm and resistance and fear.
Serene, I have one last question for you, and I think you've begun to answer it. What kind of wisdom and leadership are you looking for right now, and where are you finding it?
Well, being at the head of a theological school, I'm obsessed with the question of leadership and what do our students need to be studying to be leaders in this world. I think they need to understand history. They need to be good preachers. They need to understand their Bibles and be imaginative. The image that keeps coming back to me more than anything else, though, is that this economic crisis has produced, in a real sense, a crisis of imagination. And this gets back to the doctrine of justification. It's going to press our imaginations to reconceive value. It's like we don't even have the signposts in our brains to do it. And the people who are most adept in times of crisis of reconstructing imagination are the poets. They are the people whose craft is putting together words and images and sounds and rhythms that repattern our deepest desires. So if I can be a small part as a teacher in shaping that new poetry and making students bold enough to be those poets, oh my goodness, that's what we're going to need in the years ahead. Mm. And it's that poetry that will help us move to a Mecca model rather than a mob model for how the people pick up the spirit and go forward.
You've been listening to Serene Jones, president of Union Theological Seminary. This is Repossessing Virtue, speaking of faith's continuing exploration of the economic crisis. For more, subscribe to the SOF podcast and visit speakingoffaith.org.